Hello, this is Beyond the Bell with WASDA, Wisconsin's hub for professional development for anyone working in out-of-school time programs and youth-serving organizations. It's our mission to help you provide the highest quality care to children and their families. If you wish you had an extra tool going into programming to help guide behaviors in a productive way, wish you knew more about how to provide the whole family with support, or you want to enhance your own well-being, then this is the home for you. We know what it's like to feel like you never have enough time or resources to meet everyone's needs, and we're here to support you through the challenges. Stay tuned as we explore new ideas and strategies that you can use right away. I'm Rachel Sharon, health educator with Marshfield Clinic Health System, Center for Community Health Advancement, and Wisconsin Out of School Time Alliance. We're excited you're listening today to our conversation with Lisa Brooks. Lisa is a community health worker and an advanced housing navigator. She's a CHW coach and mentor for Milwaukee Area Health Education Center, or Milwaukee AHEC. Lisa is credited with creating one of the first successful housing plans for an HMO in Wisconsin. And we're lucky because she's here today to talk to us about homelessness, its impact on health, and what we can all do to help. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you for having me.
So permanent and reliable quality housing has been proven in research to promote health equity. But despite the evidence for housing resources, significant numbers of Wisconsin children and families continue experiencing inadequate housing, and oftentimes to a dehumanizing extent. So with your expertise, Lisa, will you tell us a little bit about housing trends and disparities in Wisconsin?
Sure. The housing trends and disparities in Wisconsin break down to the affordability of the place, if the family can afford to rent in this place, some of the conditions or the quality of the homes, if they're safe or not, if they have lead-based paint or lead running in them, and then just the safety in the overall neighborhood are the three biggest factors that we look at when we're looking at housing. So usually it will go pretty much in that order, if they have the finances, or what is the quality of that home again, because we have to look for mold and all these other things that could trigger other health issues or other issues with the children that are in the home, as well as the parents.
Yeah, so it sounds like getting the resources to maybe get your first month's rent, that security deposit, that's one battle. But then there's finding housing, that's another battle. And then after that, we still have to be worried about that quality, because there can be literally like poisons in these different places that are hurting and impacting health.
Exactly. And then some of the ramifications are not just at that moment in time that they're in those homes, but some can carry on throughout their life and affecting them far off into their adulthood.
So this is really important that we're all aware of it, because we all really are invested in the out-of-school time field and making a difference and starting kids off on a good foot. So something as simple as where they lay their head at night could also have lifelong impacts on them. So what does homelessness look like for kids and families? Is it kind of that stereotypical image of somebody on the corner? What does that look like in this day and age?
So once COVID hit, the family dynamic has changed, job loss, because no one was going out at that time. So that affected a lot of families who have not even to this day fully rebounded back. So you had a combination of not only job loss, not being able to go in, then the issue of families who couldn't get to any of these services or resources for whatever reason, because some just don't fit the requirements of the program. And those families were ending up doing things like doubling up, living with other families and things like that, in their cars, in vans. So they're not standing out with that street sign anymore saying they're homeless. It's a hidden thing, because there's a lot of shame and embarrassment with it. And this is a not by choice situation, but by force. COVID shut down the world. So we have to keep that in mind. So no, they're not standing out there with the signs, but they're doing other things, doubling up, vans, cars, worst case scenarios. They're in not the shelters, but living in abandoned buildings and things like that. So it's really a really bad situation.
Yeah, so I think maybe the common definition of homelessness, like if you have a roof over your head, then you're fine. But what you're saying is like there's a lot of different variations of this, and it's not by choice, and it sounds like there's still some risk factors that go along with this. So you mentioned like doubling up, for example. So what are some of the extra risks that go with something like that? Because when a family is staying with maybe someone else, that might look like they're experiencing more housing stability, but in reality, it's potentially something else, right?
Yes. In reality, you could see an increase in things like asthma, sanitary, more people around, it's harder to keep it clean. That food insecurity plays a role because now if that family has nothing, no income, then whoever they're doubled up with is taking on the cost of feeding them. So that means that we're going to have to include food banks and other resources. If there's an elderly person in the home, stock boxes, other ways of getting food. There's also where respiratory issues, again, connected to that sanitary, we're talking about cleaning more. There's more traffic in and out of the house. So you would have to be cleaning 24/7 to not have some type of respiratory issue, especially if they have asthma.
Yeah. So it's like really impacts that concrete physical health. I imagine too, it just creates a lot of vulnerabilities, especially for kids who are already vulnerable. And if it's not your house, you only have so much say on what goes on, which other grown-ups are coming in and out. Tell us a little bit more about that.
And that's another thing with that. These kids are resilient. Some never get over the mental aspect of being at the whim or mercy of somebody when they're doubled up and staying with somebody, knowing that at any moment, if you make the wrong move, they can ask you to leave. And here you are facing the streets once again. It's a psychological thing. Fear takes over, a constant fear. Some of the hazards that you run across when you're out there, it's a very mentally straining, the emotional stress of it. You know, just imagine a child not understanding what the adults are going through, but they know they don't have a home anymore. That's difficult to go to school and potentially be bullied or mocked, made fun of, because you don't have a place to go. So they usually hide these things. And that internal stuff for a child, it's difficult for an adult, but internally for a child, it could cause bullying. It can cause them to be introverts. You have all these different things going on, and their brain is not ready to process what's happening because you would have to be an adult. So it's a very difficult and emotional thing for these children to have to go through.
Yeah.
And then they're helpless. That's one of the biggest ones.
Yeah.
They're helpless.
It's hard to explain to anyone when their basic needs are not being met why that's a thing or how this could be happening, but especially, like you said, to kids who aren't wired yet, their brains aren't developed yet to handle some of this stuff. So it's really a big, big deal to a lot of the kids that we're all seeing in our after-school programs. So
yes, and this may be some of the reasons if you find children that are just acting out and it's not in their character. It could be something like this that's causing them to act out because they don't know what else to do.
Yeah, so you're really saying assessing the context of what might be going on, and rather than blaming an individual for a behavior, like really considering, it sounds like housing, whether they have a roof over their head or not, we still have to think of quality. All these things could be impacting what they're going through.
Yeah.
So you gave us a really good picture of this really hard truth that's happening in our world right now. What are some ways that we can maybe get families connected with the right resources and connect kids? I think sometimes after school programs are kind of seen like as a childcare, and maybe that's the extent of it, but in reality, they provide a ton of services. So what are some referrals that we can all make to help connect and support these families?
Sure. Every community has, or every city or state has, a community of care. Community of Care is an organization, it's regional, some are local, that receives funding for people who need help with rent or security deposit. So connecting with the Continuum of Care here in Milwaukee, it starts with 211, a simple phone call, and they connect you once you say you're in need of rent and security. They'll connect you to the COC, Continuum of Care team here, actually here in Wisconsin, period. You can dial 211, and they'll connect connect you to all the resources. They are a wealth of information. Just having that information, sometimes you could sit with them while they call 211 as support. That is big because you show them that you're willing, you care, and this is a genuine care about what they are going through, how they're feeling and how it impacts them. Because as the workers, the youth that are working with these people, it affects you and how you do your job. So to just be aware, cognitive, and be willing to support them, even if it's just sitting there while they're making the call, that goes a long way. Having resources for landlords on a bulletin board, first time or if they've had an eviction, these are landlords that deal with people who've had evictions before. So any little thing that they can grab, pick up, or take off the bulletin board, those are excellent ways of getting this information out to them, because you'll find that that will disappear. If there's a pamphlet on the table, they will disappear and you'll find you're replenishing. I'd like it if it's done like that, because they don't have to really say, hey, it's me, Johnny, and we're homeless. They can just pick it up and take it home. A parent coming in to pick up the children, they can pick it up and take it home. If they care to share it with you, listen, actively listen to what they're asking for and what their needs are, and find resources.
Yeah, and Lisa, you gave us some really concrete things we can do, like 211. That's a number anyone can call, whether you're a provider or you're a family that needs resources. It can be done together, apart. And then you're also starting to kind of get into the deeper level of this, and like, how do you make somebody feel safe? Because they're just inherently in a really tough situation if they're looking for housing resources. Like you say, sometimes it results in kids getting bullied and a number of other poor outcomes. So how else do we help people feel safe, and so that they can come to us and we can help support them?
You want to always be genuine. When a person sees that you are genuine and you've built a rapport because you work with these youth every day, they know that you are genuine, you're willing to listen. And not just listen, again, that word active listening is so important, because you're not just hearing every other word, but you're hearing and understanding, being willing to repeat back sometimes just to make sure you got it right. Just letting them know that you are here for them to support. That may be picking up a phone call. I know as a community health worker, we reach out to our network. We're asking, we are in a lot of different fields, and we call. So with that in mind, having a network of people in the community, some of the community agencies that are out, if it's a health thing, lead-based pain, or things like that, the health department is an excellent resource to have it come and be tested for lead-based pain. They have a wealth of information on other things as it relates to safety when you're dealing with home, the cleanliness of the water, gasoline or oils that are left in your yard that can also poison you as well. So a lot of different things your health department has information on. Community organizations, they may also work with funding. The Salvation Army, having information for them readily at hand where they can just say, hey, look, I trust Mary. Mary's been there for me. She supported me. When I talk to her, I have an issue, she listens. That right there will have that person ready to talk to you, because they know you're genuine and willing to support them.
Absolutely. And I love how you use the CHW model to kind of exemplify that relationship building, because I think for many different reasons, it's hard for people to trust certain agencies or providers, and there's a lot of complex stuff in history that goes behind that. But when in doubt, a CHW's job is to bridge those gaps, and they're trained to do that piece. So if it's something that our programs feel like they don't have the capacity to do, finding a CHW that can bridge some of those gaps between service providers can also be a really valuable way to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is the thing. We have to bridge these gaps to make the best outcome that we can make for this population, the underserved, underprivileged. There are organizations around that before I became a CHW, I would walk past every day and never knew what they did. And once I found out what they did as doing a windshield survey, I was like, oh, this organization does this, this one does that. And as you talk to more people, You found that there were other organizations who were willing to help. Whatever need is out here, I can guarantee there's an organization out here. If it's a social determinant of health, there's an organization that's out here somewhere to help. We just got to get the information to the people.
Absolutely. I think coming out of this conversation, out-of-school time programs everywhere are going to wish they had a CHW and an expert like yourself, but that's not the reality right now. So I think as we wrap up our conversation, it'd be so helpful. Is there anything else, like from your expertise, that you would recommend to programs who maybe don't have the training or the expertise? What should they know going into a situation like this?
There are two excellent sites that are out here if they need resources. 211 has a guided database search where you can put in location, zip codes, and it'll come up with resources. So that's free. I mean, you could sit with someone and pull up an agency that does this and give name, address, phone number so they can get help that way. And then there's also findhelp.org. And they cover a lot of the social determinants of health as well. That makes it really simple where you don't have to keep a Rolodex of stuff anymore. You can just use those two and get that information out to them as best as possible. We use it at CHWs. It's a free service. You can use it and get basically any service, them connected to any service that is out here that they would need help with.
And that's such a good reminder. If those listening didn't hear it before, none of us are alone. There are resources out there. We don't have to have all the answers, but there's ways to figure out how to help. So those are just a few simple things that we can have on speed dial, so to speak. Lisa, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate you being a guest on our podcast.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you.
And thanks to those listening, we hope you leave today with a few more tools in your toolbox. Be sure to visit our website and sign up for our emails where we share information about all of our upcoming professional development opportunities.